Good morning, everyone, and we welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study class, January 13th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And this morning, our moderator is Shahida from Maryland. Go ahead, Shahida.
Hello, all. Our quote this morning is from Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments. Page 125. The book of Isaiah is called the Gospel of Promise. We should apply it to our daily needs. Tomorrow you have no business with. We steal if we touch tomorrow. It is God's. Every day has enough in it to keep us occupied, without concerning ourselves with things beyond. Delay to perform a duty is not obedience. The scriptures declare, now is the acceptable time. The good that can be done today cannot be done tomorrow, and sufficient unto each day are the demands thereof. The model sermon of our great master pleads for our daily bread. We need the bread of heaven each and every day. Thank you to Linda for finding that quote for us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Perfect. Perfect.
I will jump right into the questions. The title of our study today is Holy is the Lord, and we're going to start with question number one. Who was King Uzziah from Isaiah? We'll start with who was King Uzziah before we go to the second part of the question.
He was king of Judah, also known as Azariah, and one of Amaziah's sons. He was 16 when he became king, and he reigned 52 years from 790 to 739 B.C.
And the first 24 years was with his father, Amaziah.
How was he as a king? Was he godly? Or did he stray?
He sought the will of God before he did things at the beginning of his reign, and did a lot of really good things. He was able to build up the military, and as it says in 2 Chronicles, he was into the husbandry, dug a lot of wells, fortified Jerusalem, and then there's this one chapter, one verse that says, until he became strong. And I suspect that meant headstrong. And decided he was going to burn incense in the temple like the priest. But that was not his duty to do. And that was his downfall. And the priest had to form a wall, as it were, against him to prevent him from doing that. And he got leprosy and was removed from society, as it were, and was no longer able to reign because of that.
That is very good. Thank you. Anyone want to add to that about King Uzziah?
I thought it was interesting in the reading, in additional readings, we put this in at the very end. They said that they buried him in a field that belonged to the kings, and they said he is a leper, and that's what they remembered him for, despite the fact that he did profound things.
Very good point, really good point. So he was buried in a field, not even in the royal cemetery, despite all the great things that he did.
Yeah, I had read he was next to Solomon in his accomplishments. So what lesson is in this for us?
You can't rest on your laurels.
Thank you.
I think another lesson is everybody has their place, and it's important to realize individually what our place is, and also to respect the place of others. Because, you know, here he was king, and he did a lot of great things. Next thing you know, he thinks, man, I can do anything I want, anything and everything. instead of having that humble mind, saying, God, you show me what you want me to do, and I'll have respect for other people who do their offices as well, instead of being the one who's going to take over and control everything.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I guess you're emphasizing that no matter how big we get, our place is humbly below God, His direction, everything.
We're never bigger than anybody.
Exactly.
And I think that's why Jesus always talked about being a servant, why he washed his disciples' feet. All the things he did, we are here to serve. Once you get blown up, it's a terrible danger. You know, pride in the Bible, it's referred to as an abomination by the Lord. When you get prideful, you immediately cut yourself off from the Father. And it's a great danger, especially when you're doing well. You know, when you're doing terribly, you're usually on your knees crying out and praying. But when you do well, if you start flying high, what Betty said was good, headstrong.
It is a danger.
It's a very, very danger. And boy, have we seen it. And no one is above having it happen. So we always remind ourselves to keep humble. And that this, all of this, anything we're doing, it's on God. We're doing it for Him, seeking Him, His glory. It's a very great and grave danger. And how sad, because leprosy, I mean, he was separated from everyone. I don't even know how long he lasted after that.
Yeah, he had to be quarantined.
Yeah, he was quarantined. And then what Linda said, that's what he was remembered for. So we pray daily for humility.
Is that saying pride goes before a fall?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it's Proverbs.
Given way back then, there were already plenty of examples of not to do those kind of things. So I think that's really, really interesting. You kind of look back, you know, to the previous kings that had done that, or even Solomon.
Yeah, it's a state of mind when someone gets into it. They can be almost unreachable. They have such a glowing estimation of themselves. And heaven forbid that anyone tries to burst that bubble. And this is the value of having a church and having others that will point it out to you if you're getting that way. Give you a good smack on the head to wake you up.
Ow.
That's right.
This is really good what it says about Uzziah, that you know, he seemed to feel like under the guidance of this prophet Zechariah, and that's where, you know, he led a godly life, you know, but at some point I guess Zechariah died, you know.
Yes.
And maybe he forgot all that he learned before, you know, and didn't have his guide or, you know, people supporting him or looking out for him, you know.
Or maybe he relied too much on Zechariah and didn't establish his own relationship with God.
Yeah.
Well, that could be, but I think it's really important that we understand that we're never alone in this. And it's good to have people around supporting us. And it's the reason for a community and a church.
Thank you. No, it's all very true. And all true not to be, also, to get too reliant on a practitioner. Because I've heard people, their practitioner died and then they were just lost. That's no good. So,
I know of a situation in the church I used to go to that when this man's practitioner passed on, he degenerated until he passed on himself. It was rather... You know, what speaks to what you're saying. It's sad to watch.
And when you're working with a good practitioner, that will not happen. You can only get stronger. And if for any reason the practitioner is removed, you will find yourself in a good place, not in a bad place.
Because
sure, certainly what we all found here with Mrs. Evans, as much as we talk about her and all of that, when she was gone, we had a strength to continue. We were not, oh my gosh, what in the world are we going to do?
And that's because she never allowed any of her patients to have a personal sense of her.
And the lessons she taught were strengthening, bringing out your own, you know, dominion, your own Christ. So,
yeah, exactly. Yes. She trained people.
Because I will hear, too, that people don't want to call a practitioner because they don't want to get dependent on the practitioner. Well, that's erroneous thinking as well. A good practitioner, that does not happen. You are strengthened with her work and with his or her work and help. So
it is kind of sneaky. It takes many forms.
That's true.
And that would be one of them. Oh, I don't want to bother somebody else, so I won't do this, whatever. Where's God?
It's all personal sense.
Thank you. It is.
That's right, Shirley.
And I know of people, you know, where there's big things going on in their lives, and really, they should be humble enough to be getting practitioner help, but they don't for some strange reason. Because getting practitioner help is a sign of humility, that you're kneeling, bending before God, not before person, but before God. And I've had people call me, you know, after they've made these major decisions in their lives, who they're going to marry or what job they're going to take or where they're going to live. It's all been decided. And then they ask for help maybe once or twice just to sort of, I don't know, to give them insurance or something that now they've done exactly what they want, that it'll go okay.
Oh, after they've waited a week of the same problem.
Yes. So these are all good lessons. Everything that was said here, what Tom said too about, yes, you're not alone in this church. We have people, and if you get egotistical, you will usually be shot down a peg or two. And if you can't take it, people eject themselves.
And this idea of supporting one another, it's important, but it's also important to recognize what it means to properly support one another. It doesn't mean you support whatever they do, whenever they do it, and however they do it. It means you love them enough to see them as God's obedient child and to step up and say something when you see them going off track. That's the right kind of support. Who is telling of the foe in ambush? Well, a good friend will tell you of the foe in ambush.
And a good friend will not sympathize. A good friend will not listen to you gossip. A good friend will not listen to your criticism without rebuking it. So, and many people don't like that either. That's the greatest form of love. It's the greatest form of love. And, you know, the fact that we have these Bible classes and roundtables week after week are just reminders of this for everybody, to keep everybody on the straight and narrow path. So you're not into some personal relationship, even with another member of the church, where you're either criticizing or looking for sympathy or gossiping. And if you are doing it, God knows. And you better stop, because you are off the path. And sooner or later it will be found out. It's unholy. So a right relationship where we're helping each other and encouraging other, yes. And a right relationship with a practitioner where you're not leaning, which in this church is verboten. All of these things are very important. And yes, this Messiah kind of did fall after Zechariah left this earth. And so it did show that something was not quite right there with their relationship.
And after Uzziah died, Isaiah, who was the prophet at the time, had a vision. Would someone like to recap what the vision was for us?
Someone can read it.
Well, let's read it. Somebody want to read it?
I will read it. Isaiah 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphim. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another, and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. You want the whole?
Well, that was the beginning of the vision. The rest of the vision is question number two.
You can stop there for now. Thank you. So what is the significance of this vision? What was Isaiah being told? Being shown, actually.
Well, one thing, I thought it was interesting that he saw the Lord on the throne, because at that time, Uzziah, who was the king, you know, leprosy set apart, and maybe there was a lot of concern in the country about what's going to happen, who's going to rule, whatever. Then here's Isaiah, who has his vision and sees the Lord on the throne. I wonder he was appointed to be a prophet. He saw the one that was guiding and guarding and ruling everything.
Thank you. That's a major point. I'm sure that was a great relief. That's what we all must be, God ruling always, whatever situation. Our government anywhere, our church, our home, God.
Well, and I thought, what the seraphim cried.
What's a seraphim?
Well, angel.
Yeah, it's a symbol
Yeah,
it's a symbol of an angel or a messenger from God. And the seraphim cried, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. He's crying the allness of God. In spite of how Isaiah might feel, in spite of what the circumstances might be in Judah, he's crying, God is all, and God is in control. And the door moved at the voice, and the house was filled with smoke.
I read, too, where in Hebrew the word seraph, I guess, is to consume with fire. And seraphim, holy angels, which means burner, they burn in love to God and zeal for his glory against sin, against all vainglory, ambition, ignorance, and pride. They were burning with it. So what does that mean? Do you burn?
So if you burn with the love of God, it removes the sin from your consciousness? If you fill your heart and your mind with God?
Yes.
What was burning? When you're in the presence of God, what burns?
Only the impurities.
Anything
that's a holy place.
Yes.
That's also why some people do not like to be in the presence of a Christ consciousness, because that era in them gets very feeling very uncomfortable. They don't want to be there.
Feels the heat.
It feels the heat.
The heat.
And a lot of them don't understand what the heat is. They think it's personal and it's uncomfortable. And they think, some people think it's wrong, instead of seeing that it's right.
Well, and we should all feel this zeal, to pray, to get up every morning with a love, a zeal to do this work. Not lukewarm or, oh, well, maybe, maybe not, but a passionate zeal to do this. And if you do that, you'll burn the era in yourself and perhaps in those around you as well.
Well, and also, have you ever felt your pride being burned? Your praise?
Through praise, yes.
Pride is being burned. Did your pride ever get hurt? It's a burning, cleansing process, isn't it?
And when your feelings get hurt, that's like a little flag telling you, whoops, you got some pride. Let that be a marker for you when your feelings are hurt. Bignell Young says, when your feelings are hurt, get rid of your feelings. But it means something has struck you and you're upset over it. So get rid of that pride.
So maybe the seraphims were burning up the pride that Uzziah had left in the temple.
Yeah.
That's why it was filled with smoke.
Yeah. They were cleansing and purifying. You know, thank you for this, Shahida. This is such a small little story, and we've never, ever had it in a lesson or discussed it. And I know it's come because a few weeks or months ago we had that song, Here I Am, Lord, which was based on this story. It's just an amazing story.
And that's what inspired Bruce to write this lesson.
The other thing about the seraphim, according to the 1828 Webster Dictionary and others, also indicated this, is that it's the highest degree of messenger or angel. It isn't just any old angel coming along. It's the top notch.
Thank you. And they were, you know, one cried unto another. Wonder how many were there. They were all just blasting it out. And that cleaned Isaiah's, or purified Isaiah's fears.
Let's go on to the second question, kind of flows. So what did Isaiah say when he saw this vision? He said, woe is me, I am undone. What does that mean?
It reminded me of in Prose Works and Pond, I believe it was Pond and Purpose, where there's Mrs. Eddy's writing about the baptism of repentance, and she writes, quote, a mortal seems a monster, a dark impenetrable cloud of error, and falling on the bended knee of prayer, humble before God, he cries, save or I perish. Thus truth, searching the heart, neutralizes and destroys error.
Thank you.
That was exactly what I brought today.
Perfect.
Pond and Purpose. Story of Pond and Purpose.
This holy experience brought everything he'd ever done wrong right to the surface. And it was right there on his forehead.
he was not feeling comfortable.
He was totally uncomfortable.
I love what the message says. It says, doom, doom. It's doomsday. I'm as good as dead.
Mrs. Eddy refers to this as chemicalization, doesn't she?
Right.
When the healing process brings all of the errors out to the surface and they loom large in your thought, well, that's when they're ready to leave, to be destroyed.
but it can be an uncomfortable process.
So this is realized in the seraphim brings a hot coal to Isaiah's lips. What's going on there?
Purifying.
One thing I was thinking when he said, for I am undone, I'm thinking maybe he thought his role was to tell the king, you know, what was going on. But seeing that the king was God, maybe he's like, oh, I don't really have a role if that's the case, so what can I say to him?
Another thing came to mind when I was reading this passage. I've experienced this many times when I've tried to keep everything going right, to do the best I can to do the right thing, and then ultimately it just shows how inadequate I am or I was at the time, and that the only recourse that I have is to drop everything and simply rely on God. It's like, I got no answer for this. There's nothing left for me to do except listen to God and follow as best I see the light, because all my efforts so far haven't been adequate. But that's just the beginning of something good.
I found this article in the Christian Science Sentinel, August 29th, 1914, by William McCracken, and said very much what everybody's been saying here. Prophets, Isaiah's vision revealed to him the true identity of man made in God's image and likeness. And then the uncleanness of him made him cry out, woe is me. Then what he goes on to say, which I also saw alluded to elsewhere, was that it needed the live coal of divine love to purge him of his mistaken notion about man and prepare him for his great mission and redemptive work in behalf of humanity, which would naturally include the healing of the sick as well as the saving of the sinner.
Thank you.
That's, yeah.
Well, the live coal is the burning of the pride and all other things. And we all have to go through it in order for Isaiah to do what God had wanted him to do. And anyone who wants to do God's work has to be willing to go through this process. And it is pond and purpose, definitely. Goes hand in hand with this story.
Mrs. Evans used to refer to it as the ring of fire, which is something that happens to everybody who is willing to grow spiritually and who's willing to be of use to God, because all of the false beliefs and all of the pride and all of the human stuff that you sometimes subconsciously accept has to come to the surface to be burned out by a purer love, by a greater understanding, and by total humility and obedience to the truth. And it's a burning out process. There's no other way to describe it.
And I think it's a very, yes, it is a very uncomfortable feeling, but I feel that, like, I think Colleen gave a testimony about the time when she just said, Father, thy will be done. It's when you just completely submit, Father, do with me as you would, you know, just give it all up. It's when some peace comes, and it's a turnaround, I have found.
You're right. It's only uncomfortable if you start out with a huge amount of pride.
And you fight it.
Yeah.
Eventually, you get knocked around so much, you finally say, I give up. That's mm-hmm. when God can come. I just give up. I can't do this anymore.
But often, you know, in that heat of the moment, if you try and rather to fight to feel comfortable all the time, then it keeps going on until that point of submission, Father, thy will be done, comes.
And usually when you're fighting, you're justifying. You're saying, I did it because of this, and I had to do it, and you're justifying. That's why it's the adamant of error. When you stop all that justification and say, I give up, God can come. And only then, are you prepared to do his work. And when you try to avoid that experience, what happens? Because many do.
Prolonging it.
Yeah, right. It'll catch up again.
It will come again. again.
Right.
Yep.
Like the movie Groundhog Day.
So
with bigger and bigger consequences as time goes on.
So better to yield to it. It's also, I was thinking when we talked about, was it last week, about the book, the textbook, you know, first it's sweet, then it's bitter. And I've seen people who come to the science and are so excited about it, but the first correction they get, you look at the expression on their face, and you know they didn't take it very kindly. And that's the bitter part. Are you gonna separate the error from you and know that person correcting you did it out of love to help you and progress? Or are you going to get your feelings and get your stuff all upset and go off in a huff? Isaiah was willing to be burned by the hot coal.
And thank God he was, because this was pretty early in his book.
Yeah.
He had a long way to go before he talked about, you know, Christ Jesus and the study later on.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, and you know, Mrs. Eddy talks about the lamb, and she also talks about the sheep. And the sheep have to do what?
Follow.
The sheep have to take correction.
They have to come under the rod, yes. So those of you, you know, I would notice with Mrs. Evans, and I can feel it in myself now too, you treat people differently. New people you might treat very differently than someone who's been here a long time. God directs it. But the sheep, that means the ones who've been here a while, they have to come under that correcting rod. And then she talks about what if they try to stray, it's not going to work. Sooner or later you got to do it, so you might as well do it now. Okay, who is going to speak?
I was just going to add, Matthew Henry said, the impurity of our lips ought to be the grief of our souls, for by our words we shall be justified or condemned. And that made me think of Mrs. Eddy's alertness to duty. By his works he shall be judged and justified or condemned.
Thank you.
Can we go to the next question? So Isaiah was instructed to do God's work. What was to be God's mission? Isaiah's mission. Question 3.
I believe he was to foretell the fall of Jerusalem and Israel, Judah, because the people had gone away from God, and to at least try to save a remnant. It was a daunting mission because if you look on the outside, it would seem that it could be impossible to do unless he did it with God and did what God told him.
That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone want to read it, or is it too long?
It's only 3 verses, I believe.
It's six verses.
Is it 6 verses? Okay.
But it's worth...
I'll read it.
Go ahead.
Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. And he said, go and tell this people, hear ye indeed, but understand not. And see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert and be healed. Then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate. And the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land. But yet in it shall be a tenth, and it shall return, and shall be eaten, as a peel tree, as an oak, whose sustenance is in them. When they cast their leaves, so the holy seed shall be the sustenance thereof.
Thank you.
So his mission was to warn the people of their ununderstanding eyes and ears and their heavy materialistic heart, and to be an inspiration to the tenth that is worth saving.
It echoes what Jesus said to his disciples when they asked him, why do you speak in parables? And he said, because this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes are closed, lest at any time they see with their eyes or with their, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart and be converted, and I should heal them. And then he says to the disciples, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. They would be the remnant.
Mm-hmm. What happens when you try to water down your message?
It's lost.
You miss the whole point.
You're not going to appeal to the ones who just aren't getting it. Or maybe if you do, but it's going to be so watered down, it's not going to be helpful. And you will lose the important ones, which is the remnant. Because they want the truth. They don't want sugar-coated words. The remnant wants the truth. We have to be so careful with this New Age stuff and other things because it's watered down. It's not good. Go ahead, Florence.
I was just going to say that it's so important because it's from the remnant who got the truth that the regeneration will come of what's true and not, you know, the diluted version of it.
Thank you.
And
I know Jeremy's looking forward to doing a Bible study on the remnant coming up.
2 weeks.
You can't water it down. And sometimes the others who don't get it chemicalize and carry on and tell you to be quiet, it's not true. But you have to do it anyway.
It's interesting because the watered-down version may be appealing to the 90% but will ultimately prove unsatisfactory. It will not be able to stand because it has no principle or foundation to continue and exist. And for the 10%, it's totally unappealing because they can see through it altogether. So it's going to literally fail everyone.
Yes.
And that's why for the 90% or whatever, the cities will be wasted, and the houses will become empty, and the land will become utterly desolate, because it's no good.
But the holy seed is preserved in the remnant, so that's where it will go again.
Yes.
And that's why the remnant is the remnant, because they see the holy seed. They see the pearl of great price, and it's what they want.
And that's why it will never be, I don't believe it will ever be, a mega church. It doesn't work that way. Has it ever? When you look at the Bible and you think of what's been accomplished, it's never been by thousands and thousands of people, has it? Always been just a few.
A handful here or there.
Handful here or there, yeah.
There's only thousands and thousands of people when it was going the wrong way.
That's true.
Anything else about Isaiah's mission?
Well, as it turns out, further into Isaiah, he predicted everything. And not only that there would be desolation, but then the solution, which would be the Messiah. And then there's many Christian scientists that say that he foretold Jesus in chapter 53, I believe, and Mrs. Eddy in chapter 54. So he gave us the solution to come.
Thank you. That was what his purifying process enabled him to be. He was a prophet par excellence.
He also volunteered to do it before he knew what God wanted him to do.
Thank you. That's true.
Very good point.
It is.
And isn't that true of every prophet?
And Mrs. Yeah. Eddy told one of her students who said that she would do something when she could understand it, and Mrs. Eddy said, nuh-uh, you do it before you understand. We have to be willing. That's the faith and the trust to step forward. Whether we understand or know what's in the future, you do it because God's directing it, period. Thank you.
Well, he was in such holiness that he just... he didn't have any questions. He just said, I'll do it.
Right. That was so beautiful. And that's what this whole lesson is about. Everybody just dropping everything and saying, I'm going to do it.
So our last question, because that ties really nicely, is we have in our responsive reading, Psalm 143, verse 10, teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. Thy spirit is good. Lead me into the land of uprightness. Sounds like Isaiah.
Well, we talked about pride and humility. It's throughout the entire Bible. It requires a humble heart, willing to listen and obey with their heart, as opposed to depending upon what their eyes see or what their ears hear without their heart, to be able to do anything of use. Mrs. Eddy refers to spiritual sense as opposed to the material senses. This is why we have to cultivate our spiritual sense. We have to trust it, because it is what tells us what God, it is how we listen to what God is telling us. And if we obey God, if we trust our spiritual sense and obey it, there isn't anything we can't do. Or let me say, we will always, unfailingly, know what is our right place and what God wants us to do, and we fill that place. I think Uzziah had, what was it, Zechariah, to help him listen, and he did a lot of good stuff for a long time. And if he had cultivated his own spiritual sense, his own relationship with God, and stayed humble, now, he could have continued to do a lot of good things.
I like the word teach. Teach implies what?
Humility.
Yes. But you don't know how. You need help. God is, remember that, God is your teacher. So, because I hear people say they don't know what their spiritual sense is, or they don't know how to get wisdom, or how to be loving, or whatever. Well, God, if you know God is your teacher, then you can learn. And if you have this humility, and you admit that you need to be taught, he will come in and teach you. And it truly, it is, as we are his image and likeness, it is something innate within us all. so he will help you to bring it out within you. But if you think you know it, you're starting off on the wrong foot. Get down on your knees and ask that you be taught.
And then, on the other hand, there are those who have been class taught, quote, who are very proud of their class teaching because they're so proud of their, quote, teacher, who's authorized by Boston. And they go around thinking that they are supposed to know it all. And so many of those lies are just utter disasters.
Yeah, class teaching is only 2 weeks, right?
It's 2 weeks, and then they get together once every year for their association, and they have a party.
Well, I took a lesson with one of those teachers, and I can tell you that I was totally lost. At the end of those 2 weeks, I had no idea what was everything about. She just proceeded to read or have one or the other students there read a the recapitulation questions. But at the end, I remember we had like a small meeting with the teacher, and she says, well, now you all can go and heal. And I felt like, are you kidding me? I absolutely have no idea what you just said or went over. So it was really very confusing to me. I felt very inadequate, very like, forget it, I'm never going to get this. So it was not a very good experience. I don't think it was.
No, and at least
thank
you had the good sense
to know it,
to recognize and admit it.
Well, Jim,
yeah, but it makes you feel guilty in a way because it's like, why I'm not getting it? And you know, it was not a good experience at all. On the contrary, it really plays havoc with your self-confidence.
And when I was young and attended a Boston Sunday school, and before I met Mrs. Evans, I felt guilty as well. It is a wicked, wicked guilt trip.
In order to have continued this teaching, 2 weeks, what was needed according to the ADA manual?
Mrs. Eddy's written permission?
Yes.
Correct.
I'm sorry, how is that again?
This establishment of the teachers to continue it was going to require Mrs. Eddy's signature. Of course, they didn't have Mrs. Eddy's signature, but they continued it anyway.
So that would be for certifying teachers or to...
Yes, for any... Yes,
okay.
For the church to authorize a teacher required her written approval.
Thank you.
It's true for most of what the organization has continued to do.
It's one of the, quote, estoppel clauses, which the board totally violated, totally misunderstood, which is, and their disobedience is one of the things that has ruined the Boston organization and caused its great decline.
Well, I have to say that I've said it before, but I was very fortunate because the teacher I went with was excommunicated due to her views on Mrs. Eddy's place in prophecy. And
that's wonderful.
but I went there and I came out of there euphoric and had some great demonstrations. And after 3 months, it disappeared. And what I have to say again is that here at Plainfield, there's a continuation of Mrs. Eddy's spirit, not only through Mrs. Evans, but through the elders, as I call you, in the church now, because that's the one thing that was lacking from that with all those little nuances of this, how do you have spiritual sense, et cetera, and that you can train love and train this, your spiritual sense, and this continuing education every week is so wonderful and so necessary, and that's the biggest difference that I see.
Thank you, Mike. And that Mrs. Evans came to that conclusion because she did a few times have this two-week thing going, and she decided it just wasn't working, and she began to do this. We would have class once a week, and for in those days for a few hours.
So grateful for it because really nobody talks. I never heard anybody talking about spiritual sense and how you get it and all that. Nobody. Anyway.
Well, it was in the readings that Chayudot gave us is we need the bread of heaven each and every day. Mm-hmm. But what's the two-week session that's once it's over, it's gone, that's going to be enough to carry over? Every day we need that bread. And,
thank you.
Yeah, and also about spiritual sense. It says in Science and Health, spiritual sense is the conscious, constant capacity to understand God. So it's something you have to be very conscious of, that it exists. And then also comes the consistency. Because this one-shot thing is just not going to cut it. You want to cultivate your spiritual sense. It's a constant thing.
And I think that's why people probably get into the habit of, or, you know, I read the lesson and then I leave what it's saying and go and do my work. It's not the sense of I have to live this. I didn't have it until I came to Plainfield. When I was listening to those classes, it's like, oh, this is really something I must apply.
Thank you. I was never class taught by an authorized teacher, only by Mrs. Evans, so I don't really know. I know Jim Dibble was telling me this week about how he hadn't learned anything in his class, and I've heard others say that. Maybe some did learn things, but I've also heard where they were teaching from, quote, unauthorized literature, but not giving credit to the Bigdal Young or others that they were teaching from, which I find immoral and dishonest. But, and this again, this is not in a way of criticism. This is telling you of the foe in ambush, and there's a difference. So for those who get all upset when anything like this is spoken about, not criticism, letting you know the truth. So, and this truth is what unlooses the chains that bind. And it also explains why there's been such a decrease and closing, decrease of membership, the closing of churches, and other things that are going on. But nothing can stop Mrs. Eddy's truth if we remain faithful and loyal and passionate about it. Another part of this sentence, lead me in the land of uprightness. Many of the commentators said that this meant a leveled out land, a stability, not up and down, but stability. And these are what weekly classes do. So you're not up for 2 weeks and then down for the rest of the year or whatever. It's a stability, a reminder. I need it. If I need it, I mean, I can see, and I've been doing this for going to class for years and years and years. So it's just a time to get together praising God and deepening our understanding and our affection and love for our Creator. And how do we have the right to do it? How do we have the right? We are an independent church, so we don't have to ask Boston what to do. And thank God for that. I was amused because at the bottom of our on YouTube where we had our Christmas Eve service, someone commented and said, can you have candlelight service in a church? Is that in the manual? I laughed because
I know they were criticizing us for conducting a Christmas Eve service.
Because it's not in the manual. Well, that's true. It's not. But
what about the disobedience of the extobo clauses?
Right.
Well,
what we do by what we feel, inspiration and demonstration, which is, I'm sure Mrs. Eddy would approve of that.
Exactly, because the thing is that what's being done at Plainfield is actually the true history of the church. I mean, everybody at my church says we couldn't have Bible studies and this stuff because you had to study on your own. But when you read between the lines of what the old workers, I mean, they always got together. I mean, they didn't, what did they talk about? The weather? I doubt it. I mean, they talked about Christian Science. You know, so they all got together, but then they studied individual and came back and talked about it. And that was something that I was going to say about the last Bible study and get to was that one of the differences we were talking about how this electronics is making everybody lose sight of God. And in the Bliss Knapp book, he was talking about how in the old days, which made me kind of laugh, everybody that when they met somebody on the road, they talked about God and religion. So that was very fascinating. So it was a major topic in those times.
Thank you. That is wonderful. Yes. And in Mrs. Eddy's household, she would call all her students in, and then what would happen?
She'd open the Bible.
Yes,
she'd open the Bible. She'd read from it.
And discuss what was in it. Thank you, Mike. That's a huge point. And so do you think she'd say, no, no, no? She wouldn't want a Bible study that was all human and you know, the kind that Tom has described, but an inspired Bible study and how to apply these truths, I'm sure she would approve of it. Go ahead, Florence.
Yes, I just wanted to say something about the land of uprightness. This uprightness mentions rectitude, which Mrs. Eddy speaks to in Science and Health on page 403, that the most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. And it also says that perfect rectitude belongs only to the Supreme Being. So I thought that was important.
Mary, and what is rectitude?
Rectitude... Oh.
Go ahead, Jeremy, say it again.
Moral uprightness.
Right. Conformity to truth.
Thank you. Living a moral life, not a lot of immoral things going on. Very, very important. She says that in the beginning of Science House, too, that you really want to progress in the science.
Strong morals are a very strong prerequisite.
Yeah, thank you. That's the quote. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Very much. Strong moral.
And the want of rectitude is not only sinful, but debasing. So, there we have it.
Right, there we have it. And I don't think that that is in New Age.
Well, even if they would say something like that, they wouldn't give you the practical way to go about it.
Yeah, and my understanding is it's not referencing the Bible.
Well, New Age won't help you handle animal magnetism either.
No.
Tells you all the good things about God and what you can look forward to, but it doesn't prepare you for the attack that you're going to get from mortal mind when you try to kill it.
Most important. I mean, otherwise... You go on, and then you don't know what to do. You're totally lost when something comes up.
No, it's like going into battle without any armor or without a weapon. What a stupid thing to do.
Absolutely.
Walk out there whistling.
Yep.
Well, that concludes our questions for today.
They were wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I thought also mentioned that Mary Baker Eddy's husband gave Bible studies. So.
Oh.
Acer.
Yeah, we did a quote like that a long time ago.
That's right.
And actually, they would in the old days. They in the beginning they would have a service, and then they would have an adult Bible study.
Interesting.
Horror.
All of these truths, thank you all. They're wonderful. They're all being revealed. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the lesson, Bruce.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.